Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, this is Hub Arkish, and along with Eric Edholm, it is our pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly on the Air, where every week we bring you everything there is to know about the NFL, including all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen.
Could Peyton Manning end up in the NFC West? We explore that possibility along with several other hot offseason stories.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hello and welcome everyone to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor. My co-host during the off-season is our senior editor, Eric Edholm, and we're going to take you around the NFC. Last week we did the AFC season in review. This week it'll be the NFC. But first, a couple of way we hear it items to touch on. And Eric, what would the week be if there wasn't a Peyton Manning story? Although this one, not much of a story. Jim Irsay has gone public in saying that he would love to have Peyton Manning have the choice as to whether or not to come back if he was able to work out a restructured contract based a lot more on incentives and what he could accomplish based on the health of both his neck and throwing arm. There's been no response yet from Peyton Manning, and I'm guessing Tom Condon is telling Peyton, don't respond, because this is clearly a PR move from Bob Irsay. He's telling us something that we all know. What he hasn't done is told us what kind of offer he'd be willing to make or if he's serious.
Yeah, this to me is not very newsy. It's the latest soft volley in this little ping pong back and forth between the two. And I suspect this kind of thing will go back and forth, and you know, Manning may be quiet. He may sort of opt to take the high road, if you will, until they meet, until they figure out what they're doing, because I don't think any of our minds are changed about whether Peyton Manning is coming back. Most of us feel that this situation is untenable and they're going to move on in a different direction.
Yeah, the other thing that Irsay did say is that he expected to be sitting down with Peyton shortly. Now, these comments first broke Monday late. It's possible by the time we come back and visit with you next week, they will have sat down. The reality is there's no pressure until after the combine. The spotlight's going to be back on Indianapolis with the combine. That March 8th date will start to loom large after the combine, at which point the Colts have to give Peyton Manning $28 million or he becomes a free agent. And Eric, I can't find a reason to assume that Peyton Manning would restructure a deal before forcing that $28 million payday.
I agree. I think it would be, if he was going to stay in Indianapolis, the easiest thing would be to do is just tear up the contract and re-sign him to a one-year deal or something like that. And I don't really see that happening. I think it's more likely that he would go somewhere else and do something. So, yeah, I think it's the way it's going to go.
But even if he wanted to stay in Indianapolis, he's still better off forcing that March 8th
yep.
date because it increases his leverage. His bargaining power goes up. So probably nothing new in the next week or two. Now, another interesting story, Randy Moss, who told us he was done 1 week into the 2011 season when rumors started circulating that there were teams that could use him, including the Patriots. He said, no, I'm done. Now he says, my bad, just kidding. Not really. He says that there were personal reasons that he was off during the 2011 season. He does want to play football in 2012. He will be 35 years old, but appeared to be still enough of a remarkable athlete when he retired for the first time. Maybe he could, maybe he couldn't. What more than that are you hearing about it?
Well, Randy claims he can run a 4.35, and I'm sure he can in shorts on a fast track or something like that. The question is, can he do it against press coverage in a big game and sustain that for 16 games? Can he be that, you know, dynamic deep threat he was? I mean, we all knew he had a limited route tree before his game appeared to decline. Now, the question is he going to be a good soldier? Is he going to fall in line like he did the first couple years in New England? Or is he going to be a head case? It could be a problem. The guy that Bill Belichick traded 4 weeks into the season, to the shock of many, now looking back, seemed like a pretty smart move.
Well, and unlike Ocho Cinco, who we watched clearly with diminished skills this past year, it wasn't just that he couldn't learn the Patriot system. Moss's skills did not appear to be diminished when he, quote, retired from football. He had one of those attitude cramps that he's been known to have during his career. So I think the answer on this one is teams will work him out. They will take out the stopwatch. They'll see what they think. And I suspect he will get a chance. And I suspect one of the teams that will at least have a conversation with him will be the New England Patriots. Now, we'll keep a very close eye on this one. No guarantee he will be back. And finally, T.O., Terrell Owens, is back in football. He's purchased an arena football team, and that's probably as close to professional football as T.O. is going to get again, would be my guess.
Right? Yeah, it's suddenly, you know, and Terrell Owens never really had a need for any of us when he was playing. Now, all of a sudden, you know, he wants to get back in, and he's and nobody really kind of wants him. So, yeah, I suspect his chances are less likely than Moss to return the NFL.
All right, we begin our review of the NFC, the season in review. We welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. Dan covers the NFC South as well as the Chicago Bears. And Dan, we'll start in the South with the Carolina Panthers, who had quite the first season under Ron Rivera, quite the first season with Cam Newton at quarterback, a four-game improvement from 2-14 to 6-10, pretty good by any standards. Where do they go from here?
Well, it didn't start so well for the Panthers. They go 2-8 to open the season. Then they win four of their final six. And you start to think maybe this is going to be the most exciting team, the team with a chance to go from one that was never really in the playoff picture to one being in it in 2012. They have a lot of things they need to improve on. You know, Cam Newton, despite just an outstanding rookie season, has to get better through 17 picks. They'd like to see that number come down, and it will if he makes some better decisions and has, you know, a full off season now to work with Rob Jasinski and Mike Shula. They're gonna have, you know, better health on defense. John Beeson will be back in the fold. That was a huge problem for them, the injuries, and the defense really is kind of what held this team back. The offense was explosive. Now it's doing a little tinkering on offense and really making more significant changes on defense.
Dan, the Atlanta Falcons were the team many had pegged to take the next step prior to last season, be one of those championship-caliber teams. They did make the playoffs, but they didn't go very far. They scored 2 points in the loss to the Giants, and questions have now been raised about the defense, about the future of Michael Turner in Atlanta, but also about the rest of the offense, whether they made the right move in going after Julio Jones in the offseason. Are there more questions about the Falcons coming out of last season than there were going in?
It was a massively disappointing performance by them by any measure, and it was really a departure from what we had seen from the Falcons in recent years under Mike Smith. They were inconsistent, looked undisciplined at times, unfocused. Those kind of the opposite had been the trademark of the Mike Smith regime. Now they go into an off season where they do have changes at both coordinators, coaching staff changes for the first time under Mike Smith. Big changes, big choices to make in free agency. Could be losing some key guys. And, you talk about the future of Michael Turner. I don't think he's going anywhere, but will his role change more significantly? Will Jacquizz Rodgers be more involved on offense? They wanted to open up things with the screen game. He's going to be the guy catching passes out of the backfield, not Michael Turner. So there are some big questions for this team to answer, but they, despite all the inconsistency, they did go 10-6 and are highly talented on both sides of the ball. They should be in the hunt again next year.
All right, Dan, we will continue on with a year in review for the NFC South in just a moment. First, we take this very brief commercial break. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly as we check out the season in review in the NFC. We took care of the AFC for you last week. Next week, we will be coming to you live from Indianapolis in the NFL Scouting Combine as we get ready for both the NFL College Draft and free agency, which will be starting in just a few weeks. What do these teams need to do in free agency? That's why we're going club to club for the season in review. We're visiting with Associate Editor Dan Parr, talking about the NFC South. And Dan, there are few teams in the NFL with bigger salary cap issues combined with free agency than the New Orleans Saints. The list starts with Drew Brees. It goes to Carl Nix, Marcus Colston, I believe Tracy Porter. You've got Abreu Franklin and Sean Rogers. A lot of decisions to make and only so much money to spend.
And Robert Meacham, too, a promising young wide receiver. They do have some really tough choices, and Mickey Loomis gets a lot of credit for his abilities as a salary cap manager, and he'll be put to the test like he's never been before with all these guys set to hit the open market. You would think Drew Brees is going to be around. You would think that they'll be able to keep maybe Nix or Colson, maybe both, but that looks like a reach at this point. And this is a team that considers itself a Super Bowl contender again after coming up a little bit short. This past season, they probably looked like the best team in the league from mid-season up until that loss in the divisional round to the 49ers when they turned the ball over five times and defensively just collapsed late in the game. Now you have Steve Spagnuolo replacing Greg Williams on defense, and this is a guy who's going to come in with a little different look, fresh set of eyes, a different philosophy than Greg Williams, and really turning up that pass rush using the front four is going to be key for them.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things on defense, Dan, that they face is in order to get back to that playmaking unit, they've got to add talent, obviously. I mean, there are spots that are trouble, and yet Jonathan Vilma might not be back, too. I mean, so can we expect possibly losing Porter, maybe having to let go of Vilma, maybe not having a stout defensive line across the board? There's only so much smoke and mirrors that Spagnuolo can perform there.
Yeah, his hands are going to be, I think, somewhat tied. He's going to have to deal, maybe with the guys he has. you're going to spend so much money trying to keep the guys that you want to have back from getting away. And none of those guys really are defensive linemen, or excuse me, defensive ends. Will Smith has a very high cap number. Do you try to restructure his deal to give yourself a little bit of relief? I don't think anybody expects him to be gone, but it certainly would be nice for them if they could restructure his deal. And I think, it, you know, inside, that's where the passers really lacked. Sean Rogers and Rabrea Franklin, disappointed overall. Cedric Ellis, other defensive tackle, a high first-round pick a few years ago, he's really never lived up to expectations. So if C. Spagnuolo can be the guy to light a fire under him, get more out of this group, that could be a huge difference for New Orleans.
Dan, another one of your clubs, I think one of the most interesting stories in the NFC right now, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Coming off of a 10-6 season last year, they were an almost unheard of $40-plus million under the cap. They had a number of unsold seats, and they had a team, a young team, that quit on its coach the second half of the season. Yet, they come back this year, and because of a quirk in the salary cap in the first 2 years of the CBA, the new 10-year deal, they're allowed to roll forward some of those savings. They go into this offseason with an unheard-of excess of $65 million in salary cap space. What do you expect this football, and by the way, a new head coach, what do you expect this football team to do?
Well, I think they're going to be more aggressive than we've seen in recent years, that's for sure, when it comes to free agency. They really sat out. You know, they did push for Albert Hainsworth a few years ago, and they're probably happy that Albert ended up choosing the Washington Redskins when teams were throwing out $100 million at him. You know, I think now you're going to go in and look at defensively probably as their top priority. In the secondary corner, could be some major changes there. We don't know about the futures of Rondé Barber or Aqib Talib. They're two starters at that position. Changes at linebacker probably in store. Defensive line, they feel good. They've spent, you know, early draft picks in each of the past 2 years there, and they're going to ride those young players out and see what they can do. Gerald McCoy, they expect to return from injury after missing much of last season with a biceps tear. So, you know, they're confident about the front, but as far as money, this is a team that should be involved with all the big-name guys that end up getting to the open market. We'll just have to see who's there for them.
Dan also covers the Chicago Bears for us, one portion of the NFC North as we transition to that division. Now, Dan, this is a team that also, like you mentioned, the Saints looking very good at one point. The Chicago Bears might have been the biggest threat at one point this season to the Green Bay Packers in the NFC. That's at least the way it appeared before Matt Forte went down, before Jay Cutler went down. So there is some reason for optimism in Chicago. Tell us where you think the Bears stand, what their biggest need is. I know a lot of people are talking receiver, offensive tackle, and how this offseason is going to look for them.
Well, where the Bears think they stand is behind the Lions and Packers in terms of talent. And that's why there was a change made at general manager. They talked a lot about closing the talent gap between themselves and those other teams that finished ahead of them in the division this past year. And depending on your perspective, it's either a wide gap or not so wide. You've heard, I think, a lot from Phil Emery that seems to suggest he thinks it's not as big as others do. We'll have to see, I think, how he acts when it comes to free agency and the draft to get a really, really good feel for where he thinks his team's needs are. He's not going to divulge that, you know, in press conferences. That's not his style. But their first order of business is kind of deciding what to do with Matt Forte, whether it's going to be the franchise tag or long-term deal. They said they have no intent of letting him get to the open market. This is a team that does think the window is still there. They have some older players on defense, but they think with some good moves this offseason, and they, you know, will have some significant cap space, they're going to be in the fight in the NFC North.
Interesting note on the Chicago Bears, that season-ending victory that they had to have over the Minnesota Vikings that got them to 8-8, dropped them from 13 to 19 in the draft in the first round. So an expensive win for the Bears. We'll see how they rebuild. More NFC North in a moment. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. I'm Hub Arkish. He's Eric Edholm. We're going to welcome another Arkish on board in just a moment as we talk about the NFC North. But first, Eric, you got one club in the North. I know you cover the Minnesota Vikings. Let's wrap up their 2011 and look forward to 2012 if we can.
Well, let's see. Poor quarterback play, injured Adrian Peterson, losing Sidney Rice in free agency, Percy Harvin in and out of the lineup, poor offensive line play, poor secondary play, age on the front seven. Other than Jared Allen doing well and Peterson running hard in the first part of the season, I mean, it was a tough, tough season. And they really took steps backwards that they were not anticipating. So, you know, this year it's going to be about growing Christian Ponder into that role, getting him some more weapons, fixing that secondary. Weren't major changes to the coaching staff. We do have a new defensive coordinator in Allen Williams. But, you know, still a lot of question marks, and you have to think they're running fourth in this division, which is, you know, pretty top heavy at this point with the Lions, Packers, and Bears.
And Eric, one other note interesting to me on the front office of the Minnesota Vikings, towards the end of the St. Louis Rams search for a new GM, the Vikings gave basically a raise and a new title to an old friend of mine, George Payton. Rick Spielman and George Payton, we go back to our days together in Chicago. They made George Payton the assistant general manager, wanted to keep him in Minnesota. The Rams will tell us that Les Snead was their first choice all along. Snead and Payton were the two finalists. We'll check with Dan Arkish in just a minute, who covers the Rams, as to whether he really believes that or not. But George Payton, an important part of that front office, stays put with Rick Spielman. Now, the Detroit Lions are going to be about as stable as any team in the NFL this offseason. They're young, they're talented, they don't have a lot of money to spend in free agency, and they're saying they're not going to change a whole lot. What is interesting about that ball club is how much are they going to grow up during the offseason? Because the bottom line is, other than needing to upgrade the talent a little bit still in the back seven on defense, I'm sure they'd love a big road grading offensive lineman to upgrade that unit if they could, probably another wide receiver to add to the alternative weapons to Calvin Johnson. This is a team that needs to mature. They need to continue to keep Matt Stafford healthy, and they should be able to take another step forward from really playing the Saints to a dead heat until about the middle of the third quarter of the first round of the playoffs. We now welcome in executive editor Dan Arkish, who can wrap up the NFC North for us with the Green Bay Packers. And boy, Dan, a great, great season ended on a pretty sour note for them.
Well, Hub, you know, they just picked a terrible time to play by far their worst game of the year. We all saw it, and I mean, it was so bad that there was an exit halfway through the fourth quarter at Lambeau. I mean, you never see that. But looking back, what a tremendous year. I mean, probably three of the best games, those shootouts starting with week one, Aaron Rodgers having one of the best years ever by a quarterback. But especially on defense, there's a lot of things that the Packers need to do.
All right, Dan, now we want to get to the NFC West if we can, at least one of your ball clubs, and then we'll take a quick break and get back and talk about the rest of the division. Seattle Seahawks, an interesting team. A lot of folks, including me, were ready to leave them for dead after about 4 or 5 weeks. I had a little run-in with Pete Carroll and Josh Snyder.
I remember.
Yeah, you know, and let's give credit where it's due. Second half of the season, they really turned it around, and yet I still look at that roster, and I still see a bit of a talent deficit.
Well, you know, Hub, I really think they're underrated. I think that they actually have very good up-and-coming talent overall, especially on defense. I mean, you look at that secondary. As it turns out, they have three Pro Bowlers there. I mean, Earl Thomas, I think a case can be made for him becoming the next Ed Reed. Cam Chancellor is just a bruising, strong safety. And, you know, they've got guys like Red Bryan, who's a free agent up front, a burly run defender. So I like their defense a lot, and I think Marshawn Lynch is the key. I mean, he really came on strong and just emerged as one of the best runners in football, and they're obviously going to go out of their way to keep him.
Dan, we're certainly going to have plenty of time to talk about what direction they go at quarterback, whether they make a play for Matt Flynn, who's got ties to that front office there, whether Peyton Manning's even an option. I think those are discussions for down the road as we get closer to free agency, but speaking of free agency, last year they made two big moves that I thought were really smart ones in getting Sidney Rice and Zach Miller, the tight end. Neither one panned out. Now, we know Seattle's always been a place where receivers go to die, but Miller especially disappointed in the sense that he came in out of shape. I mean, in the last 20 or 30 seconds or so, do you see these guys being able to make huge jumps over what they did in their first years in Seattle?
Well, they're definitely hoping that, certainly in the case of Sidney Rice, that he's going to be much better, Eric, with a full year of off-season conditioning. They think they can get him a lot stronger and a lot healthier, and so they're definitely banking on him coming back. Zach Miller, can't say for sure, you know, he actually ended up being used more as a blocker because they had so many injuries on the offensive line, but if they can stay healthy, he could maybe return more as a force as a receiver at tight end.
All right, Dan, again, we've got to give credit. I'll tell you, that team got to basically 7-8. We're playing for .500 the last week of the season and almost got there. It'll be very interesting to watch how they upgrade during the offseason. Quarterback still the huge question. We will take a look at the rest of the NFC West in just a moment. Yes, it is, and we are talking NFC season in review before we head to the Combine in Indianapolis, get ready for free agency, the 2012 NFL College Draft. I'm Hub Arkish, along with my co-host Eric Edholm. We are visiting with executive editor Dan Arkish, and Dan, I want to get to the rest of the NFC West, but I guess I did leave us hanging there a little bit at the end of the last segment. I don't see how they can go forward with Charlie Whitehurst, who actually is a free agent, and Tarvaris Jackson. What do the Seahawks do at quarterback?
Well, yeah, obviously it's a huge priority for them, certainly long term. I could see them going with Tavares Jackson for another year. You know, he signed a two-year deal. I don't think Matt Flynn is the answer out there, although a lot of people think he would be a great fit. If they do anything, they're going to go for a quarterback in the draft, maybe hope they can find an Andy Dalton in that first round.
And just when we thought the Arizona Cardinals had fixed their quarterback position last season with the trade for Kevin Cobb, we're kind of back to where we started, Dan, a little bit, in the sense that Cobb didn't take charge in that position. He was injured. You know, he had the concussion problems. You had John Skelton play well in a reserve role, but how much upside does he have? And now come rumors about Peyton Manning and people like that coming to the desert. I mean, just sort of sort out the mess or the confusion that exists at the quarterback position for the Cardinals.
Well, you know, I mean, the whole Peyton Manning dynamic, it certainly is an interesting situation because Cobb is due a big roster bonus in the middle of March. It's really doubtful that they're going to keep both these guys if Peyton Manning is even a possibility. I still think that they're hoping that they can make good on the Kevin Cobb investment and that he can stay healthy. He really just had a kind of a weird year. And having, a change at the quarterback coach situation and just another year in the offense might make a difference for him. But keep an eye on Skelton because he certainly, when he gets a chance to play, you know, makes his presence felt.
Dan, very few teams in the NFL with more turmoil over the last month or two than the St. Louis Rams. Jeff Fisher is the new head coach. He's getting the band back together and his assistants with Greg Williams, our old buddy Dave McGinnis. Real good staff of assistants. They've now got a new GM, as I mentioned earlier in the show, in Les Snead, who comes over from the Atlanta Falcons. I guess the first question is, was he really the first choice over George Payton? And irregardless of that, where do you see Snead and Fish taking this team?
Well, there's great speculation that Peyton was the guy, but then he decided to stay in Minnesota. Although the title that he has there, you know, it certainly doesn't seem like it would have been as big a step up as a general manager job. But for whatever reasons, I mean, maybe it was because Fisher does have tremendous power. Snead ended up being the guy, and I think by all accounts, he's a well-regarded grinder, very much like the Niners GM Trent Baalke, and a pretty solid, hard-working, adaptable guy. And so it's a three-man team now of Fisher, Snead, and Kevin Demoff moving forward, and we'll just have to see. It starts off really interesting with that second overall pick, see what they're going to do with that pick.
Last in our segment here, the 49ers first in the division, a terrific breakout season for Jim Harbaugh in his first year. I mean, things we never could have expected, Alex Smith playing at a very high level. But the defensive talent, I think a lot of us sort of, I don't know if it's underestimated, but didn't quite realize how good a unit they would have there is under Vic Fangio. Just basically, have we seen the best of this defense? Or is there the thinking that they could, you know, even with some of these veterans, that they could take another step forward? Because that really looked like the best unit in football, even when they did lose to the Giants in the playoffs.
I couldn't agree with you more, Eric. And there is an absolute belief that they can be better with a full year of off-season, really getting down and dirty with Vic Fangio's complete playbook. You've got a very real possibility of Aldon Smith moving into a starting role with an unlikely that they're going to be able to hang on to Ahmad Brooks, and we all saw, you know, how dynamic Aldon Smith can be. So, you know, you're really looking at an interesting situation. Of course, there is the free agency issues. Both Carlos Rogers and Deshaun Goldson, free agents. Can they keep both of them? We'll have to see.
Well, let's talk about another free agent, Dan, because it's going to be the story of the offseason in the Bay Area, Alex Smith. What do you do now? He wants to come back. The 49ers want him back, but they drafted Colin Kaepernick in the second round last year. I would think the Ryan Fitzpatrick deal in Buffalo is the gold standard for this guy. I mean, he's not going to get a big franchise quarterback contract, but to take less than the, you know, three-year guarantee of $33 million that Fitzpatrick got would be silly. He can get that somewhere else. I don't think the 49ers want to pay it. And I'll tell you this. Guys, if they could get a number one and a number two receiver, which admittedly is pretty hard to do in one offseason, I think they're the best team in football with Alex Smith at quarterback. So, Dan, what do they do?
Well, I think that they've made it clear they are committed to Alex Smith, and a deal is going to get done. He is going to get back and be the guy, and he's going to have, you know, Kaepernick will be there. It's not like he's got the longest leash in the world, but he overall just earn that job. But Hub, you hit it on the head. They really don't have any need except wide receiver, and it really is a glaring need. We saw just how bad a situation that was in the postseason. So they could be heavy hitters in free agency for the likes of a Marcus Colston or a Bowe, and it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, if they're players in that wide receiver market.
Yeah, anybody who wants to hang Alex Smith for the 1-for-11 on third down in that Giants game, you tell me what options he had as he looked down the football field, because I just didn't see it. Dan, thank you very much. We've got the NFC East and the defending world champion New York Giants to talk about. We're back with that in just a moment or two. Thank you all so much for being with us this week for Pro Football Weekly. I'm Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor, along with my co-host during the off-season, our senior editor, Eric Edholm. And Eric also covers the NFC East at Pro Football Weekly full-time. That is where the defending world champion New York Giants reside. And, you know, Eric, an interesting off-season ahead for the Giants. They've already avoided the first pitfall of Super Bowl champions. The coaching staff hasn't been, you know, ripped apart that badly. They've lost Mike Sullivan, who had been Eli Manning's tutor. He is going to go be an offensive coordinator. And they have lost Jack Bicknell Jr. to be an offensive line coach in Kansas City. Not too bad. So they're going to have most of the usual players in place, particularly Perry Fuel, Kevin Gilbride, you know, certainly Tom Coughlin. Free agency, however, some issues loom that they've got to make some serious decisions.
Yeah, I think there are a couple guys to sort of focus in on at this point. Aaron Ross, the starting cornerback, and wide receiver Mario Manningham. But we'll start with Manningham. You know, he was a disappointment all season long. I mean, really didn't put up the kind of numbers everybody expected. If there was going to be a breakout guy, it was going to be him and not Victor Cruz. Didn't happen that way. Heading into the playoffs, didn't see much of a future between these two, but he really stepped up, had touchdowns in each of the first three games, and then, of course, the big catch in the Super Bowl, became the guy on that final drive there where he was really instrumental when the coverage slanted the other way. So, you know, Manningham has made himself some money. The question is whether it would be in New York or somewhere else. I suspect some other team is going to view him as a two with some upside, and they're going to say, let's pay him number two wide receiver money. The Giants will probably sit back, and they'll let him have that money. They still have to find a replacement. They got to find a guy to you know, match those catches, but I would think he would move on. And Ross, as well as he played, I would think that Terrell Thomas, they want to have him back. He's a free agent. And you've got Prince Amukamara in the wings.
You know, wide receiver, the guy I'm curious about, I don't know if they're ready to write him off or just the injuries are the reason, but Ramsey's Barden is a kid they used a high pick on. He's huge. I saw him on media day. I thought I had just bumped into a tight end. I didn't realize who it was until I turned around and saw his face. The other guy I got to ask you about is it my imagination or have they been planning a going away party for Brandon Jacobs forever?
He says he wants to be back, you know, and that's after he does all this talking and has a diminished role in offense and, you know, kind of a light-footed big man, I would say, is the kind way of saying that he doesn't hit the hole hard every time. So, yeah, I mean, Ahmad Bradshaw, they want to keep rolling forward with him. I could easily see them drafting a back somewhere. They've got DJ Ware as the third option. So, yeah, I could see that definitely happen. And you're right about Barden. I mean, he, you know, even though he's been kind of injured and stuff, he might be an option.
Well, one other guy I've got to ask about is Osiu Mignore has been unhappy with his contract forever. He is still under contract. I'm sure a ring will, you know, help to soothe some of that. But even the Super Bowl winner's share doesn't make the difference for a guy who feels he's underpaid at his position. Is he going to come back and play nice? Are they going to redo that deal? What's going to happen now?
Well, it's interesting. He made himself some leverage in the sense that, you know, he missed seven regular season games. But if you count the playoffs, he averaged a sack a game when he was in there. I mean, he was very productive. He was very good this year in what was essentially a part-time role as guys like Jason Pierre-Paul emerged. But Tuck was injury prone this year too, so you need those four guys, I think, along with Dave Tollison. So, I mean, they would love to keep the four guys together, that NASCAR package, put those four ends on the line and have them rush the passer. But OC, Jerry Reese, there's still probably some hurt feelings, some bruised egos there. And, you know, it's probably going to still be a story at some point.
You know, Eric, I've been doing this 35 years, and I don't think I've ever seen a team poorer at walking the walk after they talk the talk. And that would be the Dallas Cowboys. But now I begin to wonder, personally, I just think all this talent everybody talks about is badly overrated. I think they've got some good football players, but I don't think they're a complete football team. And so I wonder, what does the offseason hold for the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, especially when it's not the skill position players. You look at the offensive line, they've got a great young tackle in Tyron Smith. I expect him to be the left tackle. But Doug Free disappointed, and the rest of the unit was just kind of a mixed bag. So, I mean, when you can't block, you're not going to be able to execute these fancy offensive plays that Jason Garrett wants to run and Tony Romo wants to throw. So that's a problem. The defensive line was not dominant last year. Brady James looks older. You know, Keith Brookings likely gone. The secondary was a mess. So you're right. I mean, the talent level, I think, is just okay compared to the rest of the division. They've got some big decisions to make, I think.
Well, and here's the other thing, Eric, and I know it's cliche at this point, but Tony Romo is still more of a bad big game performer than he is a good one. And a lot of people believe that Jerry Jones may very well use his first round pick on a quarterback.
I got laughed at when I did a Dallas area radio show earlier in the offseason where I said that it wouldn't stun me if Ryan Tannehill from Texas A&M would be their pick. And people are emailing me for days saying how stupid I was. But I'm telling you, it's an option. If they don't see that cornerback they like, that pass rusher, that impact guy that's going to start right away, it would not stun me one bit. They could also go to the end of the first round, trade back in there or trade down and get a Brock Osweiler or somebody like that. So it's a possibility you can't rule out, I don't think.
Well, and the other thing Cowboys fans and everybody else needs to realize is Romo is no spring chicken.
I mean, 31.
He languished on the bench as an undrafted free agent for a while.
Yeah.
He's now in his early 30s, certainly could have his best quarterbacking years ahead of him, but there's nothing in his play or his production, particularly in December and January, to suggest that that's going to be happening. So we'll keep a close eye on it. It should be a very interesting offseason. It always is because Jerry Jones has the microphone all to himself for the most part. So we'll see what happens in Dallas. We'll also see what's going to happen in Washington and Philadelphia right on the other side of this quick commercial break. It has taken us the better part of 2 weeks, or at least two shows, with the weekly Pro Football Weekly airing around the country. We're down to our last two NFL clubs for the season in review. That would be the Philadelphia Eagles and the Washington Redskins. Eric Edholm covers the NFC East for Pro Football Weekly. And Eric, I want to start with the Redskins because I saw a shocking number. I think it was in your notes. The Washington Redskins, not only with salary cap space, but almost $40 million. I mean, this is a team that's usually $40 million over the cap as we head into free agency. And we know one position that Dan Snyder, I shouldn't say Dan Snyder, let's give credit where it's due. He's done a better job of staying out of the limelight recently, but the Washington Redskins have got to address the quarterback position.
Yeah, and that's the sort of the great irony is that they've shown this good restraint the last couple of years and not going out and signing bonanza and, you know, free agents and, you know, not trading up. In fact, last year, a series of trades down in the draft gave them 12 draft picks. And so that leads me to believe that they don't need a huge rookie class, that they might be willing to part with two or three of their picks this year to possibly move up and get a Robert Griffin III. I think it's a logistical, you know, possibility that they could package picks for this year and next year and make it happen. You know, you throw Peyton Manning's name in the ring, I think he's a possibility. Matt Flynn, I've just heard sort of lukewarm reports out of there. I can't really say that he's one of the favorites, but those are the three names you start with when you start thinking about quarterbacks and where they go.
You know, Eric, it seems like 2-3 years now people have been trying to write off Phil Mickelson, and then every 3 or 4 months he comes up with a performance like he did last Sunday at AT&T Pebble Beach Open, and he's still one of the best in golf. Is Mike Shanahan's best time behind him, or is he capable of throwing it back out there? I mean, he's got two Super Bowl rings. It's really ironic to me that Tom Coughlin wins the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago, and all of a sudden you got fools saying, oh, he's in the Hall of Fame. Well, no, that's not automatic, I'm afraid.
Yes.
You know, Bill Parcells will tell you that. You don't even hear anybody talk about Mike Shanahan as a Hall of Famer because he's really fallen on hard times the last decade or so. Can he still get it done in Washington, or is he a classic example of a coach who should not have as much personnel power as he does?
I still think he's got something left to say, and you're right about the personnel problem. Yes, they've got Bruce Allen, a GM. Yes, they have an owner in Daniel Snyder who likes to, you know, hear what's going on with their big personnel moves, but I do think he's got at least one last gasp, and, you know, totally depends on the quarterback position. They improved on defense. They've got some interesting young parts and guys like Roy Helu and Leonard Hankerson and people like that. Fred Davis had a big season catching the football. Maybe they add a receiver like a Vincent Jackson, so you surround him with the kind of talent he had with Rod Smith and Ed McCaffrey and Shannon Sharp in Denver, and I think that offense can crank one more time.
Here's the great irony of the Redskins is that Mike Shanahan probably is on the cusp of the Hall of Fame. There's not that many coaches in the Hall, so yes, he's one of the great coaches of all time. Bruce Allen is a very sharp football guy with great football bloodlines. Of course, George Allen's son, but neither one of them are personnel people. Bruce Allen is not a personnel GM. Mike Shanahan shouldn't be a personnel coach, and it's going to be fascinating to see if they can get over that hump in spite of themselves in 2012. Now, the Philadelphia Eagles, the front office revered Joe Banner and everybody they've had there. Heckert moves on and gets a job somewhere else. Andy Reid. And they've got great talent. They just didn't win enough football games last year.
Yeah. I mean, it was a bad chemistry experiment, you know, and too much of this and not enough of that. I mean, they kind of ignored the linebacker position. That ended up being an Achilles heel all season long. They expected this offensive line to gel. And by season's end, it did. It was a very good unit by the end of the year. But through that 4-8 start, you know, the change of philosophies up front, that sort of thing. I mean, just expecting Juan Castillo to put this defense together without the benefit of an offseason, yeah, it's crazy. And it was a very un-Andy Reid-like approach. So I think this year, with more time, that same group of talent, it's going to be there. Some smarter draft picks. They might be right back in the mix as one of the elite teams.
Well, and beyond crazy, you know, I haven't made a bet in 35 years because it doesn't seem like a wise thing for the publisher of Pro Football Weekly to be doing. But if you'd have given me one bet I could make in my life, it would have been that Juan Castillo wasn't going to be the defensive coordinator again in 2012. And yet here he is. I thought for sure Spags would take the job. Spagnuolo goes to New Orleans. Now, they have added Todd Bowles in the secondary, which is a great addition. But it's still Juan Castillo's, you know, defense. And I think that shows you the incredible esteem that Andy Reid is held in by Jeff Lurie and probably Charlie Banner.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Banner. Yeah, I mean, Reid got his chance to coach again. And some people thought there was some discussion. Was Andy going to get pushed out the door? Well, that wasn't ever going to happen. But everybody assumed Juan would be sort of the casualty there. And they brought on Bowles, and I think he's going to have a big part about it. You know, the defensive line coach and his philosophies, they seem to be separate from what they're trying to accomplish, too.
Very quickly, let me ask you, because everybody assumes that DeSean Jackson is the big offseason move that has to be considered. I believe the eventual downfall of both Banner and Reid is going to be the stupid contract they gave Mike Vick. Does this team need to address the quarterback situation?
Well, I've said it. I said in our draft magazine that just went to press, I said, look, they've got to at least think about it. If they don't believe in Mike Kafka as a backup or a future starter, I think they have to look at that quarterback position at some point.
You know, you can say what you want about Donovan McNabb and Kevin Cobb and whatever they've done since they've moved on. Mike Vick can't stay on the football field, and Vince Young continues to be Vince Young. So if it's not Kafka, they've got an issue. We've got to take a quick commercial break. That wraps up our year in review. On the other side, we've got the publisher's pen.
And now with the publisher's pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Eric, thank you very much. And for those of us in the media, the best week in football is just ahead. Everybody assumes it's the Super Bowl, and the Super Bowl is great. A lot of good stuff goes on. It is fun for one and all. But it also tends to be a long, long week, a ton of writing, deadlines still to be hit. It's like the annual convention where you meet all the guys that write for you, write with you. You all feel obligated to have one more drink than you should almost every night. By the day after the game, we've all had enough. Next week, the NFL Scouting Combine starts in Indianapolis, and for a football purist, it just doesn't get any better. This is where you actually get to get up close and personal, rub shoulders with head coaches, with GMs, with scouts, with the young talent coming in to be poked and prodded. And it is a football, well, for anybody who loves the game, it is the dream. You get to really live football for a week, and it couldn't possibly be more interesting and more fun. My understanding is much like the Super Bowl Media Day. There'll be fans invited in the stadium on occasion this year, and there will be, what, 8 additional combines, regional? This is more for sponsors and as a revenue opportunity than anything else, but this is where it gets fun, folks. The Hot Stove League begins officially. Can't wait to bring it to you. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks, as always, to the best producer and engineer in the business, Randy Meyer, also to Syndication Network, our home studio and syndicator. And thanks to all of you for being there. We'll be back next week with more Pro Football Weekly.